Behind the Arc, a look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc, hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc, here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. I appreciate you checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or on our website, 991thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Radio WNML app, powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Certainly appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. And again, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please feel free to hit that subscribe button, leave a five-star review, and leave a review as well. And give me a question at Joel Silverberg on Twitter, at Sports Radio WNML to follow the rest of the station. But I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Behind the Arc podcast. Tennessee got some big news last week with the commitment of five-star point guard Kennedy Chandler. Big news in the SEC that shakes up what originally was my top five teams in the SEC in a way too early power ranking that I put out a couple weeks ago. That has changed drastically, and NCAA President Mark Emmert is embracing the idea of a bubble and why a non-conference schedule is very, very important for college basketball and for the 2021 NCAA tournament. So we'll get right into it, starting with Tennessee. The Volunteers picking up a big commit for the class of 2021. Again, Tennessee already had several key players coming in the class of 2020 with a pair of five-star guards in Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, and then four-star Corey Walker certainly helps as well for the class of 2020. Tennessee had a top five recruiting class for this past season, and so having those new players on campus and with the program will certainly help Tennessee as they look to kind of build off what was not a great season, but definitely had some late season momentum with wins over Florida and at Kentucky at Rupp Arena. And so for the Volunteers, definitely a lot to build off of, especially with John Fulkerson, who is so instrumental in both of those games, him coming back, and then Eve Pons electing not to go to the NBA draft, instead withdraw his name and return to school. So for Tennessee, it's following that up by making a big splash for the class of 2021, and that's by getting Kennedy Chandler, the top-ranked point guard in the upcoming recruiting class cycle in the class of 2021, is an ESPN 100 player, the top point guard in the country, the 11th or 12th overall prospect for the upcoming class, depending on who you look at, and Tennessee is in the running for other five-star players in this class. And so it overcame a big hurdle with being able to get Kennedy Chandler, and it was expected that that was going to happen. But when you look at Tennessee's backcourt as it is, and having all these five-star guys back there, because right now Tennessee has five former five-star recruits in its backcourt. It has Josiah Jordan James from the class of 2019. It has, along with him, it has Jaden Springer and now Keon Johnson. And Tennessee adds Kennedy Chandler to that mix for after this season. And so you're starting to see some depth built there as well. And that could lead to a domino effect. And Kennedy Chandler, it's not just a matter of finding a five-star guy who's originally from Memphis that decided to go to Tennessee. Tennessee, coming off what was a really poor season when you consider what it had done the previous 2 years, beat out Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Memphis. Big Orange emerging from a bunch of blue schools, and that's a big deal when you're Tennessee basketball, especially all these schools, not just, you know, blue bloods or teams that have big programs or rich traditions, teams that are in the direct recruiting footprint that Tennessee is trying to recruit against. Memphis has been a big in-state rival that has kind of been renewed in the last couple of seasons, having a couple of big recruiting classes already since Penny Hardaway has been there, including James Wiseman, who could be the number one pick in the upcoming NBA draft. North Carolina, who Tennessee's had a couple of close losses against recently. Duke, which, of course, you know, Duke is Duke, and then you could say the same about Kentucky being in Tennessee's league. And to beat out Kentucky and Memphis, especially, Duke and North Carolina is always a big deal. But when you're talking about going up against a direct recruiting battle against those four schools, I mean, unless you threw Kansas into the mix, I don't know if there's another school that you could throw in there for Tennessee to beat out four other schools and have it look more impressive, especially when this is a prospect from Memphis. To beat out Memphis, Duke, North Carolina, and Kentucky is a big deal for Tennessee. And Chandler's transferring to Sunrise Christian Academy in Kansas. So he's going to play this upcoming season in Kansas, but he does consider himself a Memphis native. And he said, look, I'm always going to rep my city, Memphis, but I'm going to play for my state, Tennessee. And that's a pretty strong statement coming from a player that ended up choosing Tennessee over Memphis. And so for the Volunteers, they're on the recruiting board. That's their first commitment for the 2021 recruiting class. Of course, Florida State has looked very, very good for that class. I don't know if anybody's catching up to the Seminoles for the number one overall ranking, but Tennessee does have its eye on a couple of other five-star players, including a couple of 6'10 guys in Jabari Smith and Paolo Banchero. And Paolo kind of has a bit of a relationship with Kennedy, and Kennedy said that he's going to be attempting to recruit those guys. And for Jabari Smith, I actually saw him log on to Kennedy Chandler's Instagram Live commitment announcement. So you know that these guys are close. You know that they all have a good relationship. And you're talking two of the top five players in the class of 2021 with Smith and Banchero. And so for Tennessee to be in the mix for those guys, if Tennessee even lands one of them, but if Tennessee were to land both of them, and you're talking about three of the top 12 prospects in the class of 2021, Tennessee suddenly starts looking like a team that is setting itself up to have consistent elite success like it did 2 years ago. What happened 3 seasons ago was a bit of a surprise. Grant Williams ends up being the SEC Player of the Year. Admiral Schofield really emerges as a key player. You start getting good backcourt production from Jordan Bowden, Lamonte Turner, and Jordan Bone. Turner, of course, making big-time shots like the Purdue game earlier in that season. And Tennessee goes from being picked to finish 13th in the SEC to finishing 13th in college basketball and ends up making the second round of the NCAA tournament. And it's actually a disappointment when Tennessee doesn't advance the Sweet 16. So when you consider where Tennessee was based on preseason predictions to where it ended up, to be disappointed in its result, it sounds like Tennessee made a lot of improvement. And then the following season, Tennessee stays in the top six the entire year in the AP poll. And that legitimately was a disappointment for Tennessee to fail to win the SEC regular season title, fail to win the SEC tournament title, especially after getting that huge win over Kentucky in the SEC tournament semifinals, and then ends up getting bounced in the Sweet 16 by Purdue in overtime and just a really close game there. But after that, it was kind of apparent that Tennessee was going to have to take a bounce back year because Schofield and Kyle Alexander were graduating. Grant Williams and Jordan Bone both decided to jump to the NBA early. There was just not a lot of depth coming back. You needed guys to emerge into bigger roles. And for John Fulkerson and Eve Pons, you had that. Josiah Jordan James, bit of a slow start, but he played the entire season injured. Lamonte Turner, that shoulder injury got worse. Jordan Bowden just wasn't his usual self. And so you're having just a different starting five, a different look on the court, and trying to figure everything out. And early on, it looked like Tennessee was easily going to be a tournament team when you considered some of the wins that they had. Then the Memphis game happened, and Tennessee followed that up with a bad loss to Cincinnati, in which Cincinnati was a good team, but Tennessee did not play well, and Tennessee didn't play well against Memphis. And after the Jacksonville State game, Lamonte Turner hangs it up. Santiago Vescovi comes in midseason. Juroš Plavšić, unable to get eligibility until right into the SEC schedule. And so you saw some good stuff from some of those guys, mainly Santiago Vescovi coming in midseason and not even arriving on campus until the week before the LSU game and the SEC opener. But ultimately, just not a team that was capable of going to the NCAA tournament. And maybe things would have been different if Santiago had been there the entire year. Maybe you could argue that the Memphis and Cincinnati games are different. If you can reverse those, if you avoid losing to Texas A&M, which at the time was a terrible, terrible loss, if you don't get pounded by Auburn on senior day, given the results that you had late in the season, then you can start making an argument. I don't think Tennessee was that far off, but the timing and the opponent for some of Tennessee's losses were what were keeping it off the bubble late in the season. And Tennessee likely would have needed some sort of big run in the SEC tournament just because of what was happening with the other Power 5 conference bubble teams, including in the SEC. And so for Tennessee to now be in this stage where it's recruiting really highly in 2020 and already recruiting highly in 2021, we've seen what Rick Barnes can do with three-star guys. that team a couple years ago that spent the entire season ranked in the top six and made the Sweet 16, which I realize Sweet 16 is a disappointment, but you have to be at least a solid basketball team to have the expectation to make the Sweet 16. That was a solid basketball team. That entire team was three-star recruits. DJ Burns was the only four-star on the team. He did not play that year. He redshirted and then transferred to Winthrop. And it had been kind of rumored, hey, would this guy, how much would he really be able to contribute had he stayed? And he ended up being a key player for Winthrop, but it was a bit of a slow start there early on in the season when he was playing for Winthrop as well. But now you're talking about, okay, not only can Rick Barnes develop the three-star talent, now he's reeling in the five-star talent because it's three consecutive classes, assuming that Kennedy Chandler stays committed to Tennessee. It's three consecutive classes where you have at least one five-star recruit. And you had one five-star recruit two seasons ago. You had two five-star recruits this past season. Tennessee is in the mix to potentially get three. If Tennessee is consistently getting even just one five-star recruit with every class, but if Tennessee's consistently pulling in a couple of five-star recruits every other year, you are talking about Tennessee being a basketball program that doesn't have to have, okay, we're going to take two steps forward, we'll take a step back, but then we're going to develop some guys, and then we're going to be really good the following season, and then maybe we can get some momentum rolling. It's not going to be like that. Tennessee is going to turn into a program that is going to be expected to compete in the SEC every single year. It's going to be expected to compete for a four or a five or a six seed in the NCAA tournament at the worst. And we've all seen this before, and we're seeing it in trends recently in the last few years with the NCAA tournament. Yes, a strong freshman class with a lot of freshman talent can come in and take over college basketball. And you almost saw that with Duke a couple years ago when it had Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, and RJ Barrett. It had a fantastic recruiting class. But it lost in the Elite Eight to Michigan State that went on to the Final Four. So you see elite teams with a lot of freshmen, but what are the types of teams that actually make deep runs in the NCAA tournament? Well, it's borderline guys where you could see them either way going to the draft or coming back to college. When those guys elect to come back, those teams end up having a lot of success. So you could have made the argument if Grant Williams and Jordan Bowden had both decided to stay. And for Williams, obviously that would not have been a necessary decision because it almost appears as if, okay, he's won SEC Player of the Year in back-to-back years. If he doesn't win it a third year in a row, it looks like he made a step backwards. He ends up being a first-round pick, and he's currently playing in the NBA playoffs right now for the Boston Celtics in the first round of the NBA playoffs down there in the bubble in Orlando. Jordan Bone, if he elects to come back, well, maybe Tennessee's season is a little bit different with all the speed that he possesses and what he's able to do. And the offense runs through him a little bit more. And so maybe that makes the transition in the front court a little bit easier for John Fulkerson. Maybe he gets his offense going a little bit sooner. Who's to say? We'll never know. But players like that, where you can justify, okay, Bone got drafted late in the second round, would it have made sense for him to come back to college? He could have potentially improved his draft stock. And the rumor was for Eve Pons was that he's likely gone because he's being told he can't improve his draft stock. And so now maybe he can. We'll find out if he can improve his draft stock. We'll find out if he turns into a draft pick over the course of the year. I don't think it's guaranteed. I don't think he's guaranteed to improve his stock. But defensively, he's a weapon. I think worst case scenario for Pons after this season, he's going to get a look somewhere in the NBA just because of his athleticism and his versatility to be able to guard the one through the five on defense and is a great rim protector, especially for somebody of his size. This is not a 6'10 guy we're talking about. We're really talking about a glorified wing who can do it all on the back end of the court. So Tennessee getting a monster commitment from Kennedy Chandler, building more recruiting momentum for Rick Barnes. And now you're starting to see why Philip Fulmer and Tennessee made the arrangements it did to ensure that Rick Barnes did not go to UCLA after last season. So for Tennessee, they seem to be in good standing. What about the rest of the SEC? Major shakeup towards the top of the conference from earlier this week and over the weekend. We'll talk about that next. I'm Joel Silverberg. It's the Behind the Arc podcast on the Esports Animal. I appreciate you listening to the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, and the Sports Radio WNML app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. So mention key players that could justifiably go to the draft and come back to school. Eve Pons elected to come back to school. Isaiah Joe for Arkansas elected to come back to school and then changed his mind again. And Isaiah Joe, the sharpshooter for Arkansas, has elected to re-enter his name into the NBA draft. So originally, teams, for schools, players had until August 3rd to elect to decide to return to school and withdraw their names from the NBA draft. For underclassmen, they had until August 17th to change their minds and go back in to the NBA draft. And Isaiah Joe elected to do that, citing the coronavirus and the unprecedented cancellation of fall sports by several major college conferences. To him, he believed that there was too much uncertainty for the upcoming college basketball season. And from what it sounds like, chatter with coaches and NCAA officials, everybody believes that the college basketball season needs to happen, then that the NCAA tournament needs to happen. Coach K over at Duke has already been outspoken. He has said, tournament needs to happen. We need to have a season. And the NCAA tournament has already been canceled once. And I had David Cobb from CBS Sports on the podcast last week, and he was very adamant. It's already been taken away once. You've seen what has happened with the college football season. There is no excuse for the NCAA to not have a plan in place, whether it requires a bubble or not, to ensure that the NCAA tournament happens in 2021. Keep in mind, the NCAA does not oversee the FBS bowl games. It does not oversee the college football playoff. That is done outside the NCAA. It does not technically sanction the national champion in FBS football. It sanctions it in FCS football, but the NCAA tournament is under the NCAA. It is a $900 million revenue event for the NCAA. And so to lose out on that for a second year in a row would be devastating. And Matt Norlander from CBS Sports said earlier this week, you're talking about athletic departments having to cut teams, especially with smaller schools that aren't dependent on football. And in college basketball, we see, 130 teams in FBS football and then another or so in FCS. You're talking about over 350 Division I men's college basketball schools. So this is a big revenue booster for these conferences to be able to get teams into the NCAA tournament, especially if you get a mid-major school that can manage to sneak its way into the second round or Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. You're talking more units acquired for that conference. And then, of course, major programs like in the Big East that are big-time basketball schools that some of them don't have football programs. So, and none of them have FBS football programs. So you are talking about big money-making opportunities for some of these big-time schools, especially when you consider just how electric the Big East was this past season. And then you throw out Gonzaga, another big playmaker, which Gonzaga, Mark Few, and Scott Drew, Baylor's head coach, announcing Gonzaga and Baylor are going to play at some point this year. They don't know when, because the NCAA has to make a decision by mid-September as to what is exactly going to happen. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 are not going to be playing sports in the fall. That means for the Pac-12, they've emphasized basketball. Basketball will not happen until January, which means the Pac-12 is not playing non-conference basketball. So the fact that Gonzaga and Baylor have thoroughly thought this out, it sounds like that they may be onto something, that there could be the opportunity for these teams to play big-time non-conference games. Because with the Pac-12 not playing any non-conference games, you're talking about all those smaller conferences out west, the Big Sky, the Big West, schools, the California schools like UC Irvine and UC Davis, and in the Big Sky, when you talk about Northern Colorado and Montana, all these schools in Eastern Washington that are right there in the thick of Pac-12 country that play all of these Pac-12 non-conference games against those Power 5 schools, they make money off, Eastern Washington, we're going to go down to Los Angeles, we're going to go to UCLA, we're probably going to lose, but we're going to collect a paycheck as a result of making the trip. Those schools lose that income now. And so for the NCAA tournament, it has to happen to help be able to generate all this revenue, and to have schools like Gonzaga and Baylor willing to play a non-conference game if they can make it happen, even if it has to happen after January 1st, it's going to be big for college basketball, because you're seeing more of these conference versus conference challenges. We all know the SEC Big 12 challenge, the ACC gets in on it, the Big 10 has a challenge, and then the Pac-12 was supposed to do a coast-to-coast challenge with the Big 12 this year. Well, that's not happening anymore. That's off the table unless something happens after January 1st. And so seeing more and more of these big time programs, if that ends up being a trend where they all try to play bigger non-conference games, is going to be really crucial to also not just having a more exciting college basketball season, but also getting a better metric for what the NCAA tournament could look like. Ken Pomeroy, who ordains the KenPom.com rankings, has said himself, you really can't have a true metric for the NCAA tournament if you don't have non-conference games. You don't get the same analytics if Gonzaga is just playing teams in the West Coast Conference and if Michigan is only playing teams in the Big Ten. You won't have a true metric. It'll be too difficult to appropriately seed teams. Now, you can use the eye test, obviously, but Ken Pom has a point here. If what is the measuring stick? And now sometimes we can see just how good a team can be based on its non-conference schedule. Gonzaga last year had a lot of really tough games and had some big results. You had Oregon and Michigan play a big non-conference game. And now that can also lead to showing the season may not go for a team. When you look at DePaul, who I've mentioned a lot on this podcast, their non-conference schedule looked fantastic. Arkansas, their non-conference schedule looked fantastic going into conference play, and they ended up going 7-11. And even though they were missing Isaiah Joe for five games, still, even if Arkansas had gone, 13-7, is that really much more impressive, or 13-5? I mean, 13-5 is obviously very impressive, but that probably wasn't going to happen, or 12-8 or whatever, or 12-6, I should say. But there were just so many games that even Isaiah Joe was a part of in the SEC where Arkansas didn't look that great, games that they had opportunities to win and didn't. So some teams look very good in the non-conference slate and play good non-conference teams, and that ends up not telling us anything. But I do think that it's very difficult when a conference like the Big Ten, which was coming off a season where at one point Joe Lunardi had 12 Big Ten teams in his bracketology, you take that bias into the following year and the Big Ten teams only play each other. Okay, well, how good really are these teams? Are these other Big Ten teams that are normally towards the bottom of the pack or were struggling last year, are they better? Is the conference actually deeper? That's what the non-conference schedule kind of allows us to do, is it you get a bit of an eye test because of all these big-time non-conference games going on throughout the course of the season. You know, when Maryland wins a share of the Big Ten title in the regular season, well, that makes it look much more impressive when Seton Hall, which beat Maryland at a time when Maryland was ranked in the top 10, it makes it look that much more impressive when Seton Hall wins a share of the Big East after beating Maryland without two starters in the lineup, including Miles Powell. So seeing it all shape out like that, it puts a little bit more perspective, especially when we see these teams go through these gauntlet of conference schedules, because it's also not necessarily fair if you took away the non-conference schedule from this past year and you looked at Arkansas, which went 7-11 in conference play and didn't have Isaiah Joe for five games, and you say, okay, well, Arkansas is probably not that great. They clearly don't have a lot of depth. But what built their case and all that momentum going into the SEC conference schedule was the fact that their only loss in the non-conference schedule was to Western Kentucky, and they had some decent wins, including at Indiana right before the non-conference schedule ended. So taking away the non-conference schedule can sometimes really hurt a team's resume. And I realize that there's recency bias sometimes, but it's really important to highlight how important I think it is that the NCAA try to figure something out where if they have to do NCAA non-conference bubbles, and you've seen different proposals for this from CBS Sports, from The Athletic, from all over the place, of getting X number of teams to go to a bubble for 2 weeks. They quarantine, they test, and then they play five games in 10 days. And because of the AAU circuit, that sounds like a crazy workload for some of these students, but from what they're used to on in AAU ball, playing three games a week is not the craziest thing that you could suggest. And I realize probably a little bit more intensity, physicality, more physically demanding once you're talking about major college basketball. But the point is that if you're trying to shrink the amount of time that these teams have to be in a bubble or in isolation or having to just play each other and they can't go out, well, you're trying to shrink the risk of teams getting COVID and then having to start to cancel games as a result of positive tests within the team. So however it's going to work, I have no idea at this point in time. It is August 18th and we're talking about this. It's August 18th in the evening and we don't know what's going to happen. But getting back to the original point, Isaiah Joe electing to stay in the NBA draft obviously was a big contributor for Arkansas this past season. I originally had Arkansas at number 5 when I released a way too early SEC power ranking from a couple weeks ago. I had Tennessee at number 1, Kentucky at 2, LSU at 3, Alabama at 4, Arkansas at 5. And I was really going back and forth with Arkansas and Alabama. You know, should Arkansas actually be 4? Well, that's definitely not the case now. So I think I made the right decision choosing to put Alabama at number 4. And Arkansas, could it still be a really good basketball team? Yeah, I think so. It could still be a tournament team based on what we're seeing from years past. I mean, is it probably one of the top 64 teams in college basketball? Yes. Now, granted, because of mid-major conferences stealing automatic bids all the time, it doesn't exactly work like that. But with Arkansas, you still have Desi Seals coming back. Eric Musselman, I think, has proven that he can coach guys up. Solid recruiting class, 8th-ranked recruiting class in the class of 2020, 4 four-star commitments, plus 3 incoming transfers that will all be eligible immediately, including Justin Smith from Illinois. So you have talent, you have experience, plus you have an influx of high-quality young recruits that can come in. And hey, if you even hit 50% on those 4 four-star guys that are coming in, and you have 2 four-star players that make an impact immediately, with Desi Sills coming back, with some of those transfers playing a role as well, chances are Arkansas should be able to hold its own in the SEC. Now, Ole Miss probably jumps into that number 5 spot. I don't know what this does for Auburn and Arkansas in terms of who's the 6, who's the 7, and then you have Florida in there as well. Florida I had at number 8, mainly because they were so disappointing last year. Sure, they've got guys coming back, but these guys were a disappointment last year, so why should I believe that they're going to be significantly better without Kerry Blackshear Jr. and without Andrew Nembhard, who transferred to Gonzaga? So, you know, Scotty Lewis, Trey Mann, okay, Keontae Johnson, that's great. It's great that they have those guys back. Mike White has kind of been a disappointment outside of that one run to the Elite 8 he made. And last season, they were ranked 6th in the country to start out the year. They were nowhere near that. And it was the whole season, they were easily the most disappointing team in college basketball last season. And I realize what happened over in Chapel Hill. I don't care. What happened last season with Florida was abysmal. And I think and Florida still might have gotten into the NCAA tournament despite all that, but it's still very disappointing. Auburn, yes, its top 6 scorers are gone, but a top 10 recruiting class, including 5-star point guard Sharif Cooper. Bruce Pearl, I think, is a proven coach. Now, he had a couple of rough years there in Auburn to start things out, but the last couple of seasons, he's coached his team up well. This is a risky pick to put Auburn this high. I'm really giving the benefit of the doubt to Bruce Pearl and those new recruits coming in and making an impact early. There's a lot of hype for Ole Miss being a top 25 team early on. Now, I'm impressed with what Kermit Davis has brought in. This past season did not go very well. Breann Tyree is gone. You're replacing him with Romello White from Arizona State. Radford guard Dementio Vaughn has a lot of expectations. 4-star guard Matthew Morrell could be very, very good. This team is trying to rebound from a 12th place finish in the SEC. And last season, it was in some close games, and late game management cost this team. It needs to come together a little bit more. It needs to have all these pieces, and it needs to start executing. So I have Ole Miss at 6. It's probably going to go up to 5. I'm still a little bit skeptical about just how good this team can be. Granted, in Davis's first season, he took that team to the tournament. So he's got some equity there in Oxford. I just think it's worth pointing out that, you know, let's see it all come together. Which sample is going to be more of an accurate picture of what Ole Miss is this season? Is it year 1 with Kermit Davis, or is it year 2 with Kermit Davis? So for Arkansas, I've got them dropping out of the top 5 in the SEC power rankings, and I still think Arkansas could be a good team. It doesn't have the same threat that it did when Isaiah Joe was on the roster. So all in all, you're talking about what is still, I think, a pretty deep conference in the SEC. Early bracket projections with Joe Lunardi, he's kind of had Tennessee and Kentucky towards the top of the SEC in terms of seed lines, but he's had them both at around a 4 or 5 seed. So the expectation right now appears that you have a lot of teams that could potentially make the tournament. You don't have a ton of teams that look like their Final Four capable. Now, we've talked already in the last couple of weeks from what we've heard from Tennessee assistant Desmond Oliver, from what we've heard from Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, from what we've heard from David Cobb from CBS Sports. Tennessee may not be a Final Four team going into the season. It certainly has the potential and the ceiling to where it could be playing like one at the end of the year. But early on, when you're looking at Gonzaga, Villanova, and Baylor, and regardless of what order you have them in, I think those are your top 3 teams in college basketball to start off the season. you are looking at a bit of an uphill climb to get to that level. Iowa having Luka Garza coming back, obviously a big deal. So Illinois having Kofi Coburn and Ayo Dosunmu coming back, obviously a big deal. So you have a lot of really highly talented teams that are already occupying those spots with Final Four aspirations. Now, as the season goes on, and one of those teams ends up being a disappointment, maybe Gonzaga really does miss Filip Petrushev more than it's anticipating. Still, it makes some room for Tennessee that they could be one of those teams competing. Hey, we've got experience, plus we've got young talent, plus we have a coach that knows how to do this. We might be able to make a run. So Tennessee going to be going in likely as a top 15 team, maybe right outside the top 10, depending on the poll. But expectations are going to be high, and that's internal as well. Rick Barnes believes that he has a team that's capable of doing big things. Desmond Oliver has already been outspoken about that, and you've added on to the hype when you consider that you're doing it well on the recruiting trail just as well as you are at times on the basketball court. That's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Again, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, and on the Sports Radio WNML app. I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. If you have a college basketball question, feel free to say hello and let your thoughts be known there. And we'll do it again next week. Thanks again for listening. It's the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.